it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ben Standings is still standing after all these years, and he's with us here on Friday at 12 noon, as he is every week. He'll join us Monday, too, game day, this coming weekend against the Bears. So the injury report, the first one out yesterday, or the second one, I guess. And I just want to ask you real quickly, like, are we essentially ruling Terry McLaurin out? Is that it? I mean, he didn't practice yesterday. I know he was out and about, but do you think this is going to be week three without him?
Well, I mean, you know, as we know, obviously guys can make, you know, you could not practice all week and still go, but when you tack on the two previous weeks where he had done very little, like at least to use Jaden Daniels as context, he was a Friday limited participant on the first week that he missed. Then the next week there were, you know, two limited. So there was at least some sign of trend moving forward. Here, there's the trend's been pretty minimal. If we're, you know, if we're saying that at best it was him running up a small hill, not at full speed yesterday at practice. So it doesn't look great, but, you know, we'll see. We are not out there today. This is a weird week because of the Monday night, so we don't get it back out there until Saturday, but they will presumably put out an injury report today stating something. So he's not listed as at least limited, I would say. He'll be out another week.
So, you know, a lot of the questions about Jaden before last week were, you know, he's chomping at the bit. How are you, coach, able to keep him, you know, from, you know, doing too much, you know, and how are you handling those conversations with him, you know, that he wants to practice, et cetera. Is that the same situation with Terry?
Well, it's interesting.
I know the injuries are different.
Yeah. No, it's interesting that you phrase it like that. You know, in a broader context, you know, whether you're talking about your favorite sports team or politics or whatever, there's always this notion of, like, you know, bias in the media, and, you know, most of that, at least my world, is, you know, hokum. But it does factor into a degree with how you ask certain questions. And again, you know, in the case of Jaden Daniels, like, obviously it was like, you know, there was at least a feel that, like, hey, he, you know, he is itching to go, that, you know, that this injury is, you know, something, but it's, you know, what's going, you know, it's just a matter of, what is it, a pain tolerance? Like, we get the feeling he wants to go. Now, I'm not saying Terry doesn't want to go, but I'm just saying we honestly probably haven't really asked that type of question, because I think it's all a bit more of a mystery the way that it was all presented, you know, right off the bat with this. He's getting a second opinion. He doesn't need surgery. Wait, why are we even discussing surgery? We didn't know it was even that bad. And Dan Quinn, you know, in my view, feels a little bit more reluctant to answer some Terry questions than Jaden ones. Not that we ever really knew the exact nature of Jaden's knee injury, but yeah, I'm sure Terry is itching to go. I just don't know in the same way, because of the way things went down with his contract. You know, it leads to what's going on here, and maybe, I don't know, maybe we just haven't asked that type of question yet for me to tell you definitively what I think. I mean, again, he wants to play, but I don't know what's going on here exactly with why, you know, is he actually close? Is he not close? Is there something else going on? That's the part I agree. I think it's fair to say we need to learn more.
Debo Samuel, is it the same thing as last week with the heel? He'll miss a few practices, but be good to go Monday night.
That is my impression. I mean, the fact that he spoke with the media yesterday suggests, you know, that, like, he wasn't, you know, he wasn't, you know, if it was something bigger, right, you know, he's probably not going to talk. They can all sort of fall under the guise of, you didn't practice or you're hurt, so you don't have to talk to the media, and he did. So, yeah, I think he's good to go there. Obviously, that Washington is 3-2, having Jaden miss two games. Terry's now missed two other guys have missed multiple games, that, you know, the offense has still largely been clicking, is a huge testament to what Deebo Samuel has done. Not just him, of course, I mean, the run game and the offensive line, but, like, you know, as the primary playmaker, as evidenced by last week. I mean, Jaden, more than half of Jaden's completions went to Deebo. He had, you know, on the final drive to put the game away, three catches, including the touchdown, plus a 17-yard pass interference penalty. Yeah. And, you know, it's one thing to produce. It's another thing to sort of put your stamp on everything, and he's been doing that a lot, obviously.
Sam Cosmi was a full go in practice yesterday. When he is ready to return, and I want you to give me, you know, your best estimate on that, who does he replace?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, both of those are fascinating questions. I mean, you know, he will, of course, go back to right guard, which is where Andrew Wiley is right now. And, you know, look, I think Wiley is obviously a guy that is, you know, he's a proven vet who, you know, played inside with the Chiefs at, you know, peak Kansas City. And, you know, I guess my nod would be a little bit towards him, but, you know, when you talk about chemistry on the offensive line, that's always a big deal. And Chris Paul is the one that's been there on the left side in between Laremy Tunsil and Tyler Biadasz. You know, both of them are free agents after the year, so you really can't play, though, what's the longer-term angle? You know, Paul is younger, so I'm guessing Wiley, but if you tell me it's Paul just for the chemistry aspect, I'd be like, okay. I mean, I think he's played pretty well so far. As for Cosmi, I think today is a big day in that assessment. It was they had a padded practice yesterday. I talked to Cosmi for a little bit before and after the practice, and he was – you know, look, we all just kind of, if a guy gets hurt, we'd go, okay, he'll be back in 9 to 12 months, and he goes away, and we don't really think about it too much other than to say, how is the team going to replace him? But, you know, it is a complete and utter disaster for these guys to have to endure all they're doing, not just the rehab, not just the recovery, but, you know, they're often in, like, isolation. They're often away from their teammates and just different schedules and all these things. And then when you do get thrown out there, sure, he's done the various rehab drills and certain practical aspects, like, you know, hitting the tackling dummies and things like that. But, right, you know, he was saying that, like, you know, to your body, the nervous system is a massive difference when all of a sudden you're getting pushed and pulled and pulled in different directions. And so he wanted to see how he felt coming out of this padded practice. I think he was okay, but, you know, I'm not going to be surprised if they decide to be cautious and let him sit for one more week.
Talking to Ben Standig at Ben Standig on X on Twitter. Ben writes a Substack column. He's got a podcast. Both are called Last Man Standig. So before we just before we look ahead to Monday, and we'll get your thoughts and we'll get your pick on Monday. You don't have to make it today. We're less than a month away from the trade deadline. Last year, they made a move. They went after, you know, Marshawn Lattimore, traded for a corner because they felt like they needed something there. Didn't really produce for him last year. And the truth is, he hasn't produced in a major way this year either. Do you think they'll be looking to add something or maybe even sell something between now and November 4th?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, you throw out caveat that they would say, hey, we're always looking to improve the team, whatever that means. So, you know, there's always that angle. In terms of the acquisition, like, we, you know, when we talked about this, or at least I've talked about this, you know, over the course of the season, you know, receivers seem to be the one who are like, hey, you know, they need to get some help. And honestly, I don't know that that's necessarily changed. I mean, Chris Moore, the last two games, has played 75 snaps and has zero receptions, right? I mean, Luke McCaffrey.
And dropped a touchdown.
Right, and dropped the touchdown. Luke McCaffrey was really good on that one catch last week, the 50-yarder, a great catch. Helped, you know, turn one of the plays that helped turn the game around. It was the only catch that he had. Jalen Lane, there's a lot of promise there. We see the speed, you know, he had the big 3rd and 16 catch last week, but again, it's been relatively low production. But, you know, both those guys are up and coming, but they're young and inexperienced. So, you know, I think the Noah Brown part of this is obviously key, not just when he's back. Now, he has practiced this week, so if you say, what do you think about him playing, I think the chances of him playing look pretty reasonable. I definitely am not going to say he will play based on his history, but at least he's been out there the last couple of days, and, you know, he seems like, from a demeanor perspective, somebody that's really focused on getting out there. But what about tomorrow? What about the next week? Is he making it through the season? Are you counting on that? And if not, then, you know, what do you do? Maybe that's like more of a lower-level acquisition than it is like a Marshon Lattimore type. But that to me is the one position where I wonder what they think. I'm going to guess that they are feeling much better about it now, assuming that Terry and Noah Brown are, you know, back relatively soon. Other than that, I mean, look, I don't know. Is Brandon Coleman a potential guy they move at the trade deadline, seeing as how he was a third-round pick a year ago, has started out games in this league? But now, you know, when you just ask me who's going to who's Cosme replace, I mean, didn't even discuss, well, what about Brandon Coleman? And I think it's reasonable to not do so based on where things stand. So could you move him? I mean, again, this team has 6 draft picks next year, but only 2 of them are, you know, in the top, I think, 4 rounds or so. So, you know, because of the other trades they've made, they've got a lot of they don't have a lot of capital up high. And obviously, you always have to get that. They have a ton of free agents next year. And they're still, you know, still building a roster, relatively speaking. So if they can find ways to add more picks, I don't think that would be nuts, but it's hard to say they're going to do that when we constantly say, hey, their depth is still kind of wonky. So I feel less confident about them doing anything at the deadline than maybe I did a few weeks ago. But again, let's see where we are with Noah Brown and maybe some other spots by the deadline.
That was interesting, the Brandon Coleman idea. I didn't think about that. They're clearly very high on Chris Paul at this point with the way he's played, and I think justifiably so. And Cosme's coming back, and they've got versatility with Wiley, and Brandon Coleman started a lot of games as a rookie, and, you know, let's face it, you know, that's why you can't be too hyped after a year, and you can't be too down after a year when it comes to these draft choices, because I think a lot of people had Brandon Coleman before the Laremy Tunsil trade pegged in as the left tackle for years to come. I wonder what they could get for Brandon Coleman right now. And I'm not even suggesting it would be the right thing to do. And maybe there's still a great belief in Brandon Coleman. But I bet they can't get what they used to draft him. It's got to be a fourth or a fifth, best case.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, going back to last offseason, I mean, you're right. I mean, having a general sense, it's like, okay, well, here's the guy. I definitely wasn't of that mindset. I mean, that's why I was asking Peters and others at the combine, hey, is Brandon Coleman your left tackle? And then when the answer was like, oh, we like him, and then never said he was, I was like, okay. But then they didn't just move past him at left tackle. They then did the same at right tackle by taking Connerly, which just moved him inside. And, you know, we all get too worked up over, like, how if a rookie doesn't look like an all-pro in the first month of his career, like, oh boy, this is a bust, right?
Yeah, Adam Peters is a joke, and then the flip side is Adam Peters is cooking after 3 games.
Right, but in this case, to make, like, benching Allegretti as they did simultaneously, you know, look, Allegretti's been a viable guy, and if he is, you know, like, he was like a Wes Schweitzer-y type guy, he can't start, but he comes off the bench.
Wes Schweitzer.
Well, you know. He was like that lineman 5.5 often for them. Allegretti kind of same, but to bench a guy you just drafted in the
third
round,
an Ari Quanjo type.
There you go. But like, you know, with Coleman, to bench him after 2 games this year and replace him with a guy who, look, give Chris Paul credit, he's improved. He's a guy that's kind of been hanging on, and now he's given this opportunity and he's taking advantage of it. But you know, you would tell me Chris Paul wasn't even going to make the roster back in OTAs. I'd be like, all right, well, it's conceivable, sure. And if you look again, Chris Paul's not under – his contract is over after this year, right? So, it's not like he's like, oh, well, he's the guy for the next 3 years. I'm sure re-sign him, but that's not a lock. Whereas, like, with Coleman, he's still on his rookie deal for 2 years past this. So it says something that they were motivated to make that move, and that they haven't seemingly, really kicked those tires about moving him back. So that's why, that's the only reason I'm saying, hey, maybe there's something there. Look, we saw, you know, I know they didn't draft Jahan Dotson, the Peters regime, but, you know, they moved on from him last year. You know, Brian Robinson, a little bit the same. So, you know, they've been willing to say, hey, there's a guy here that we is young and up and coming, and we could just sit here and justify and say, hey, there's been an investment made by this organization. Let's go forward. And yet they didn't. So, yeah, that's why I think it's at least something to consider.
Remember when Eric Flowers played really well and then all of a sudden kind of disappeared and his career ended?
Yeah.
He played really well that one season, and then it was like, well, wait a minute. Why aren't they bringing him back? And then nobody signed him. I think that's true.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I mean, I always find it funny, you know, look, it would be fun, as I think we would all probably agree, to be on the other side of all these discussions, to be in the front office, to be, you know, look at how the rest of the world is interpreting what's happening versus whatever their reality actually is. And, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's why we all get frustrated at times, certainly a reporter does, when you try to get, hey, why this, why that? And then either A, they don't tell you, or, you know, they say something that's just completely, I'm not saying this group, but just in general, they say something that's completely misleading. And you're just like, oh, come on. You know, like we all endured the Curtis Samuel journey there, you know, with that injury. Like, hey, what are we doing here? So it's always fascinating to wonder what is actually happening. But, I mean, the reality is you can point to any, you know, Adam Schefter on down and nobody often really ever knows.
That's true. All right, I'll ask you, finish up with a couple kind of looking forward. First of all, did last night change the way you feel about how gettable the division is?
Well, I mean, not just last night. You know, when the Eagles win a game the week before where they didn't complete a pass in the second half and won, like we talked a lot about last
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we talked a lot about how Washington. And correctly so. There was a lot of things that went their way last year on top of their own good play. Well, I mean, it's one thing to win a game in the last play. It's another thing for that to happen and still win. I mean, they've been showing signs of vulnerability throughout. I mean, I know fantasy football players have not been happy necessarily with, like, A.J. Brown getting the ball in the passing game in general. Saquon Barkley was not a massive factor last night relative to, you know, his play. And, you know, we know that on defense they lost a bunch of guys in the offseason, which, you know, is what happens when you're you have a really good team and others want your free agents. And so, like, they were vulnerable. And then, look, there's always the, you know, you're going to get the best effort from the other team at all times. Like, I don't know, you know, we'll see where the Giants go. Obviously Jackson Dart had a really fun start here to his rookie season, but yeah, the Eagles thing is definitely curious. But again, you know, I guess the thing with the Eagles is, if when the Chiefs are struggling, we all say the same thing: cool. We'll see them in January, and everybody will be petrified when they're playing. I think we should probably feel the same about the Eagles because it wasn't just they won last year; they've been a pretty successful team here now for a few years. But I don't know; it feels a little less. I'm a little less confident in that. But yeah, I mean, it's. In terms of the division, it's gettable, but let's see Washington win two in a row before you know, I go too crazy there.
All right, what are you thinking Monday night?
Well, I mean, it's obviously, you know, really, I mean, the amount of subplots are pretty significant. You know, the Hail Mary, obviously, the first and second pick from last year's draft, Ben Johnson rejecting Washington. You know, before they hired Dan Quinn, all those kinds of things.
Okay, let's make sure we're clear on this because I know you know this. He didn't reject Washington. He didn't turn down an offer.
Well, I rejected them from the interview perspective.
You know, yeah, the interview. He rejected the interview when they were on their way. Correct. But more likely than not, I don't think it was going to, in my opinion, because I did said from the beginning that how much they loved Quinn, I still don't think that even if they got to that interview stage, it was going to result in an offer necessarily. I mean, it could have. He could have blown them away with how hungry he was to be a head coach and had the, you know, the PowerPoint set up and ready to roll. But I guess the thing that just irks me a little bit, and you know this because we've talked about it, is the Quinn was the 7th, 8th, 9th, 11th choice crowd. I mean, they clearly had no clue what was going on during that search.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, with getting too in the weeds here, you know, Dan Quinn has seemed, it's been very clear the line of demarcation between where Adam Peters does and what Dan Quinn does. And Dan Quinn, when we ask certain questions or get to certain topics, he walks up the line and then stops and says, go talk to that guy. I think Ben Johnson, you know, and look, he was the hotter candidate at the time, you know, as we saw when ultimately he did go take the Bears job. I think he wanted more, which, sure, I mean, why not? But I don't think he was getting that here. And I feel like with the Bears, he probably has more say in what's going on. And, you know, that may have, you know, from his perspective, that might be the end of it. From Washington's perspective, you know, I talked to somebody the other day, and, you know, for what these two teams needed, I mean, Dan Quinn was a much better fit than Ben Johnson. Not just this organization, this city needed a big, fat hug. And Dan Quinn is more of that guy. Ben Johnson is more of a, hey, I'm going to yell and scream and tell you how great I am. And maybe he is all that, but that's not what was needed here a year ago.
Yeah, and they sensed that right from the beginning after they talked to him on their first call. You know, that this was the right culture guy for sure. All right, I'm running out of time here, but just we'll get your pick on Monday night. But it's a matchup where, you know, you look ahead and it's like, you know, somebody said it last hour, a caller. This is kind of a game you kind of need to get, and so do they. It should be a good game, but I think you got to come away somehow with a win to get to 4-2 with what's ahead.
Well, and this is what I was saying last week, that last week was a perception versus a reality game, because we can keep sitting here and saying that this is a team that is, you know, still a contender off of what we saw and some of the improvements they've made, but you have to continue to move forward. So they do last week, but last week goes away if they fumble at home against the Bears. Look, the Bears have plenty of weapons on offense. Their offensive line revamped has done a pretty good job of keeping Caleb Williams healthy. Their defense still has some concerns. And, you know, again, if there's no Terry, you know, are they able to still move the ball? A story I put up today on the Substack is about how Debo's rise here, not only is it impressive, but it's a stark reminder of how terrible the number two receivers have been with Terry. We talked so much about the quarterback carousel that he endured. I laid it out. Go look at that. The receivers have been an utter disaster. So, you know, can Debo, if he's the one guy, can he keep this up by himself in the Superman role? Does he have to get real help from somebody else? You know, we'll see. But that this is a huge game. Even though,
look, if they lost him to injury, and he's been injured a lot in recent years, it would really hurt. Big time. He is, right now, you called it during camp. You know, you said he was by far and away having the best camp of anybody offensively. And we've seen it play out. He is on a record pace for receptions, touchdowns for his career. And he's had a couple of pretty good years. And they would be, as great as Jaden is, it would be a big hit losing him. Big hit. I got to roll. Thanks.
Awesome, man. Appreciate it, as always.
Ben Standing, everybody. I've got like 16 picks coming up next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, this segment of the show presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. So gave out the Giants last night plus the 7.5. So off to a 1-0 start, now 41-26-4 on the year, hitting at over 61% now on the season. And knock on wood, have not had a losing week in the first 6 weeks of the season. Last week, I didn't love the card, went 4-3. This week, there's just so much to like. There are just a lot of games in which, you know, the public sort of has identified a team as the wrong team favored or the right team favored by not enough. And it starts tonight with Fresno State, a 5-1 football team, on the road at Colorado State. Colorado State is 1-4. Fresno's laying 6.5. There are a couple of sevens out there, and nobody thinks the line's big enough. So I'll take Colorado State and the points plus the 7 on a total contrarian play. I liked Colorado State last week, did not give them out, and they did not get it done. And sometimes when you see that the odds makers, for some reason, believe Colorado State is better than their record indicates. They've lost 3 games in a row to UTSA, to Washington State, and Washington State's a bad football team. They got blown out last week by San Diego State. I almost gave Colorado State out. Meantime, Fresno has won 5 in a row, but the last 2 have been really close against Nevada and Hawaii. This line really feels like it should be 9 or 10. It's 6.5, 7. Give me Colorado State tonight plus the 7. Let's go to Saturday. Alabama is a big public favorite. They're laying 3 at Missouri, a noon kick. Missouri coming off a bye. Missouri's undefeated at 5-0. Drinkwitz, their coach, is good. Their quarterback is good. You know, Penn State may rue the day that they let Bo Probilla go for Drew Aller. I don't know. Aller's okay. He's just not what they thought he would be. Now, Missouri, you know, hasn't really beaten anybody. The win over Kansas looks pretty good. The win over South Carolina, there were some injuries. You know, Sellers was hurt. Bama last week got beat up. That game was closer than it indicated. The public really likes Alabama. There's sharp money on Missouri. I'll take Missouri plus the 3 in that game. Let's go to Air Force at UNLV. Dan Mullen, remember, he was doing the college football recap show last year on ESPN after leaving his last job before that, which was Florida. He was pretty good on that studio show. He's now the head coach at UNLV, and in his first year, UNLV is 5-0. Now, they have not played anybody. Wyoming, Miami of Ohio, a bad UCLA team that showed that they weren't super bad last week. Sam Houston State, Idaho State, but they're 5-0, and they're laying just 7 against the Air Force Academy. They are 1-4. They got into a shootout last week. Really good football game, I was told. By the way, an aerial attack both teams last week, Navy and Air Force. Air Force is getting 7. The public is on the undefeated UNLV running Rebs laying 7. I'll take Air Force plus the 7. This is my toughest call, but I'm going to go with it because it's a system play here. Colorado's getting 3 against Iowa State. Now, I gave out last week Cincinnati laying points against Iowa State. They won outright. Iowa State's banged up, injured. They were ranked 14th in the country. They're coming off a loss, and the public just thinks they're much better than Colorado. And by the way, Matt Campbell is a better coach than Dion. He's one of the best coaches in the country. They're laying 3 in Boulder. This is just, the line's just too short, and the average bettor is laying the 3 thinking that the line's wrong. I don't love the coaching matchup. I don't like the matchup in general in analyzing it, but this is, you know, Colorado plus 3 all day because every book in the country will need the Buffs to cover it. Let's go to K-State and TCU. I actually think TCU's a pretty good team. I also think K-State's a pretty good team. I gave them out a couple of weeks ago laying 5.5 against UCF, and they won that game easily. They lost a heartbreaker last week to Baylor. Every game they've lost has been close, going back to the game in Dublin against Iowa State. TCU's good. The quarterback's good. They've got some talent at wide receiver. They're laying, as TCU's a 4-1 team against a 2-4 team, they're laying just 1.5 in Manhattan, Little Apple, Kansas. I'll take K-State plus the 1.5. Red River Shootout in Dallas, even with the potential return, and it looks like he's listed as probable, Mateer is the quarterback for Oklahoma. Oklahoma now just a 1-point favorite. I'll take Texas plus the 1. Here's a game that just reeks a bit. Iowa has been pretty decent. Iowa actually gave Indiana their best game, had a shot, lost 20-15. They are currently a 3-2 football team. The two losses, you know, less than, you know, 5 points or less to Iowa State and Indiana. They're laying just 3 against a Wisconsin team that's lost 3 in a row. Really haven't been close, even though they covered against Michigan last week. I'll take Wisconsin in Madison getting the 3 against Iowa. Let's go to Saturday night. Auburn plus 3.5 against Georgia. Auburn will be one of the biggest anti-public plays of Saturday. They struggle to score, but Georgia, you know, on the road in this one, this is a big one for Hugh Freeze at Jordan-Hare. He's got to get a signature win. Plus 3.5, take the Tigers. And Clemson, everybody thinks, is back on pace to do something after ripping Belichick in Carolina last week. I don't think that's true. I'll take Boston College plus the 14.5 in Chestnut Hill against Clemson. Let's go to Sunday. Man, there are a lot of NFL games that fit the smell test criteria. A lot of public action on one side, a lot of sharp action on the other. I gave this team out last week, and it didn't work. It wasn't even close. The early game in London, Denver off the win over Philly, the Jets looking terrible against Dallas. People think that Denver should be laying more than a touchdown. They think that the line should be 8, 9, 10. I'll take the Jets plus the 7. Sorry. Give me the Panthers plus the 3. Everybody's on the Cowboys. Everybody's rolling with the Colts minus 7.5 at home against the Cardinals after the Cardinals lost their third straight game on a walk-off field goal. So, of course, I'll take the Cardinals plus the 7.5. The Saints beat the Giants last week. They're catching 3.5 at home against the Patriots, who knocked off the Bills. Everybody in love with New England. I'll take the Saints plus 3.5. I'm giving you some bad football teams, man. Jets, Cards, Panthers, New Orleans. How about another one? The Dolphins plus 4.5 at home against the Chargers. Major public action on the Chargers. And then in the biggest game of the day, the Sunday night game, Kansas City laying 2.5 against the Red Hot Lions. I'll take the Chiefs and lay the 2.5. I'm not done yet because I'm going to give you the Monday night game out right now. I like the Falcons plus 4.5 now at home against Buffalo. Almost gave out the Bears. I might do it on Monday. There's still time before Monday. But that's it for now. A lot of plays. Starting with tonight, Colorado State plus 7, buying the half point against Fresno. Tomorrow, Missouri plus 3 at home against Bama. Air Force plus 7 at UNLV. Colorado plus 3 at home against Iowa State. K-State plus 1.5 at home against TCU. Texas in the Texas-Oklahoma Red River rivalry game. Texas plus 1. Wisconsin plus 3 at home against Iowa. Auburn plus 3.5 Saturday night at home against Georgia. And BC plus 14.5 at home against Clemson on Sunday. Jets plus 7, Cards plus 7.5, Panthers plus 3, Saints plus 3.5, Dolphins plus 4.5, Chiefs minus 2.5, and then Monday night, the Falcons plus 4.5. All of these plays, man, totally fit the anti-public, and yet you're going with the sharp action model formula. But it's worked a lot this year. 6 straight weeks. I feel like there's certainly a chance a rough, difficult week is coming. The biggest dogs in the NFL have now won outright for the last 6 games. I think it is 5 games in prime time. Last night, the Giants. Monday night, we had the Jags weren't a big dog. The Patriots on Sunday night. We've had that going here for a while. Eventually, the public starts to win a little bit. They don't lose every timeout. So tread lightly, but I feel good about the card. There are 16 plays I just gave you. They'll be posted on the team980.com later today and at team980.com on Twitter. We'll finish up. I've got some thoughts on the Terps and Nebraska tomorrow, and we'll go around the NFL a little bit when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and theteam980.com.
All right. Happy Football Friday, everybody. We will start off with Thursday Night Football. Jackson Dart and the Giants get the win against the Philadelphia Eagles in a game of man football, the human wrecking ball. Cam Scataboo with three touchdowns of his own. Jackson Dart threw for just one, but it was too much for Philly. 34-17, the final score. Giants get home with the win. The Phillies, they fall to the Dodgers in a heartbreaker that went into extra innings. Orion Kerkering loads up the bases and has a dribbler that ends up at his feet, decides to throw it home, and the ball just ends up way too far away from JT Realmuto. Dodgers, they walk it off and advance to the NLCS. The Chicago Cubs, they force a Game 5 against the Brewers. Bit of a bullpen game, but it came together for Chicago as they shut down the Brewers. Michael Busch, Kyle Tucker, and Ian Happ, all with home runs for the Cubs. They win by a score of 6-0. Later today, we have the Tigers taking on the Seattle Mariners, I believe in a Game 5 scenario. That'll be tonight at 8 p.m. That will also be on Fox, I believe. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Den's office throughout all of football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we head across the pond for the third early game of the season. This time the New York Jets fly overseas to technically host the Denver Broncos, who just took down the defending champs. Kev, your guy Nick Benito leads the league with 7 sacks and has a chance to become the first player since J.J. Watt to record at least 1.5 sacks in 4 consecutive games. The Jets come into this one still searching for their first win. Feels like Aaron Glenn's first season slipping away from him. Kickoff, 9:30 a.m., head referee Lan Clark. Broncos, -7, over-unders, 43.5. Can the Jets sneak out of London with a win, or do the Broncos improve to 4-2?
It does feel like the Aaron Glenn first season is slipping away from him, no doubt. Man, I mean, I just gave out the Jets plus the points in a smell test pick, so obviously I think this is going to be a bit of a hangover game for Denver. Maybe a game. Look, they're the better football team, much better football team, and I could see Justin Fields having a disastrous day with that pass rush. They've got to try to run the football. They did it against Dallas early last week. Denver's a different animal, obviously. Justin Fields has to get better at processing and getting rid of the football, or they just have to turn him into exclusively a dual threat zone read. Let's just try to run the football and go RPO with Justin Fields in the pass game. Eventually you got to drop back on third and long. Understood. I really like this Denver team. I do. I think this just could be a hangover spot where it's kind of an ugly game and, you know, somehow they eke it out at the end, you know, 24 to, you know, 18 or something like that. See how I got that under the number? Yeah, I mean, Denver's legit. Denver's a legit threat to win the AFC West. They have pass rushers and defenders everywhere. I mean, you could argue right now they've got the best corner in the league in Surtain and the best pass rusher. I mean, I wouldn't take Benito over Watt, over Garrett. I wouldn't, but God, is he unbelievable. Leads the league in sacks right now with 7. Had 13.5, remember, last year. And he's that body type, you know, that lean, lanky, long, you know, 6'3", 240 body type that just seems to be difficult to block when he wants to get after the quarterback. This could be, by the way, a double-digit sack game for the Broncos. Ooh. If the Jets aren't careful. I like Denver, but not to cover.
Fair enough. All right, we go to Baltimore, where John Harbaugh and the Ravens take on Sean McVay's L.A. Rams. L.A. got a little extra rest in this spot with the mini bye, but they are a West Coast team coming east. Plus, the Ravens have won 5 of their last 6 versus the Rams. Kickoff, 1 p.m. Head referee Alex Kemp Current line, Rams -7. Over under is 44.5. Does this trend continue, or can the Rams come away with a win this week?
I mean, I just find it amazing that the Ravens are the favorite to win the AFC North at 1-4, with the Steelers in the division at 1-3, but 3-1. I don't think they expect the Ravens to win this week. They're a big dog. And look, the Rams have the extra rest coming off last Thursday night. They need this one. The Rams are good enough to contend for the NFC Championship, but at 3-3, they fall big time behind in the division. I like the Rams here. I almost gave Baltimore out because nobody's playing the Ravens this week. Can they run the football with Cooper Rush and Derrick Henry? You know, Cooper Rush had some decent games in Dallas. It would not be surprising to me to see the Ravens more competitive in this game and not give up 90 points and lose, you know, legitimately like 40-10. Like, I could see this game being a 30-24 kind of a game, but I like the Rams to win and to get to 4-2. This is a good football team, L.A. is. Still can't believe they lost the game last Thursday night. What a game that was to the 49ers. I like the Rams, but not by the number, actually.
Fair enough. All right, Dak Prescott and the high-powered Cowboys offense take their talents down to Charlotte, going up against Bryce Young and the Panthers. Both teams coming off wins in this one. And despite being 2-3, the Panthers have gotten both their wins at home so far this season and are looking to claw above 500. Kickoff at 1 p.m. Head ref John Hussey. Kick Cowboys -3. Already gave out the Panthers as a smell test pick. Over-under is 49.5. Can Carolina keep it clean at home, come away with the win here? Or does one of the NFL's best offenses continue to put up numbers?
This just stinks, this game, to high heaven, and feels like a game that, by the way, you pointed out, Carolina's 2-0 at home. The wins over the Falcons and the Dolphins, understood. This is a Rico Dowdle revenge game. He rushed for 206 yards last week. By the way, you know, their rookie back from Georgia, Etienne's brother, Trevor Etienne, has shown some signs. Tet McMillan, the pick from Arizona, the wide receiver, has shown some signs. This is a better defensive team than Dallas faced last week. Yeah, Carolina can win this game, of course. It would be a testament to Dallas if they can go on the road and win two games that kind of felt like trappish kind of games against the Jets and the Panthers. This would be impressive to me if the Cowboys come out with like another impressive, you know, sizable margin win against the Panthers team that's played well at home. I like Carolina, though, to at the very least lose a very close game, but I think they can win this game outright.
All right, to Lucas Oil, where Danny Dimes and his 4-1 Colts host Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. Tough loss for Arizona, as we all know, and the Colts show no signs of slowing down. In fact, the Colts rank #2 in scoring offense in the NFL and #3 in scoring defense. Kickoff at 1 p.m. Sean Hockley, the head ref. Colts -7.5, over-under is 46.5. Cardinals pull it together. Colts cruise to victory, Kev.
Yeah, so this is... this is the scary team right now, because when you see a team that you're not expecting start off with a really good record, sometimes you can explain it away, but this team can flat out score. All right, they can really roll it up offensively. They are talented. The one loss was the game in which Mitchell, you know, booted it going into the end zone, and then they gave up an 88-yard touchdown to lose the game in regulation. I gave out the Cardinals because nobody's going to play them after the last 3 weeks and after last week in particular. We'll see if the Cardinals have any, you know, true bounce-back resilience after the disaster last week against Tennessee. I think regardless of what happens on Sunday in Indy, I think the Colts are good. Go ahead, next one.
All right, I think this next one's going to be a blast. We got the Seahawks heading east to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars, who seem to be rewriting what we've historically thought when we see the Jags. The first time since 07 that the Jags have won 4 of their first 5 games. Seahawks quarterback Sam Darnold is balling early this year, but these defenses are top 2 in the NFL in interceptions. Kickoff 1 p.m. Clay Barton, the head ref. Line currently Jags -1.5. I like the Seahawks in this one until I saw 80% of the money was on Seattle +1.5. Kevin, am I falling into this trap?
I almost gave out Jacksonville. The problem is there's some sharp money on Seattle as well. I don't think it's a trap. I think this is a really interesting matchup. You pointed out a lot of West Coast teams going east this week. You know, Rams in Baltimore, Seahawks in Jacksonville, 49ers in Tampa. it's Jacksonville off the emotional Monday night win that would lead me to believe that Seattle can certainly go in there and win. This really is, to your point, this is a really interesting 1 o'clock window matchup. Maybe the best one in that window to watch.
All right, heading down south where the Dolphins host Justin Herbert and a banged-up Los Angeles Chargers. The Dolphins coming off their loss to the Panthers and giving up the highest completion percentage in the NFL, and Justin Herbert can damn sure sling it. But this is another West Coast team traveling east. Kickoff 1 p.m., Bill Vinovich going to be the head ref. Chargers minus 4.5, over-unders 43.5. Do the Chargers get back in the win column, or do the Dolphins surprise people like me?
This is going to be a tough football game for the Chargers. They are banged up. We saw that last week. Tough loss for them. It got even worse during that game because they lost Omarion Hampton. He's on injured reserve, and they're down to basically their third and fourth string running backs if you go back to just a few weeks ago. I think this is going to be a tough game. The Chargers maybe eke it out with a field goal at the gun, something like that. But imagine that 3-0 start against all AFC West teams if it disappears. We're not going to have time to get through the rest
of these. We're about to go through a really gross stretch of games here, too.
Yeah, but let me just mention, I think 49ers Bucks in that 425 window followed by Lions Chiefs. I'm glad Washington doesn't play on Sunday, and we can wait until Monday night and just sit back and watch the NFL on Sunday. This is big spot for the Chiefs Sunday night. Really big spot. And if the 49ers go on the road and win like they did last week in LA against a Tampa team coming off the win, Kyle Shanahan deserves unbelievable kudos because he's doing it with his backup, who really might be better than the starter. Maryland plays Nebraska tomorrow. I hope last week's disappointment doesn't really subdue the people that were starting to get excited about it like me. I think they got a shot. It's a better team, actually, in many ways that they're facing tomorrow than Washington, in a better situation because Washington was coming in, you know, off that physical, you know, worn-down loss to Ohio State, man. Ohio State's defense is rough. Tough spot for the Terps. If they can pull it out, we can go have ourselves a season. A loss, and people are going to be bailing pretty quickly. Good luck, Locks and Company. I'll be out there to watch Maryland and Nebraska tomorrow in College Park. I like the Terps a little bit, but not a lot in this one. After last week, I think they're really good on defense, though. Hey, Window Nation's got a great deal going on right now. Buy two, get two free, pay nothing for 2 years. All right, so you're basically paying half price for the windows, and they're offering no down payment, no monthly payments, and no interest for 2 years. End your window problems. Replace those old windows that are costing you a lot of money on your heating bills with brand new windows. Trust Window Nation. They offer a lifetime warranty, and they've got over 45,000 five-star reviews, ranked highest on Forbes' list of best window installation companies in America. Get started with a free estimate before October 31st to save big on your replacement windows. Schedule that fast free estimate now with my friends and the pros at Window Nation. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com. Back on Monday, game day, Chris Russell next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.